It's time for the TV Talk Machine podcast, episode number 90. I am Jason Snell, your co-host, and across the internet from me, my co-host, your host, and the chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
That's a lot of titles.
I know. There's a lot of hosting and things. I should just call you the Ray of Sunshine, the Mr. Happy Sunshine Man, because I read you wrote a piece with Dan Feinberg about the best and worst of 2016, and you got kind of, I don't know, it made me feel uncomfortable. You were like liking a lot of things.
It made you feel uncomfortable. That's wow. Okay, my reputation precedes me.
I was worried that, you know, I was like blink twice if it's a hostage situation, that sort of thing. Just a little.
Yeah, you know, we went through this list, he and I, and there's a lot of stuff in the first 6 months of 2016 that I already love. So there's that.
Yeah, I mean, the number you guys threw around, I'll put the link in the show notes, of course, is 20%. Like, you really liked, like, there's 20% of the TV out there is really good. And then the other 80%, yeah, it's terrible. But that 20%, like you said, is worth all the time you can spend on it.
Yeah, and you might not have enough time.
Yeah.
Because really deep, that 20% is really deep now.
You guys were sharing your, because you do, as listeners of this podcast know, the reviewing split. And in the story, Dan asks you, like, hey, did you watch this good show or this good show or this good show? And I could hear it. I could hear your voice being like, yeah. You know, and summer used to be good catch-up time, and it's not good catch-up time either. It's just,
yeah, and he's got a lot to do to catch up on some of his on his ends, although he's fanatical. He does a lot of stuff, and oh my God, yeah, we talk a lot about this. We lead different lives, but we are both behind. It's just, I think everybody is these days. It's impossible.
You guys can, we've talked about it here too, you guys can double team this all you like. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, both of you are professional TV critics. You need to know the state of the art in TV across the board. So even if you're not reviewing it, you kind of have to watch at least some of the best stuff just to be, you know, just to have currency. You can't be like, oh, I can't pick at the end of the year the best shows on TV because half of them Dan reviewed instead of me. You can't do that, right?
No, you can't do that. No.
So it only helps so much to split up the workload.
Yeah, it's a little bit crazy that way. You have to, we split it up, and like we said here, it doesn't really, I mean, it helps in the writing of the review. So that's an hour plus
sure.
time. And you know, he and I both know that if there's something gratuitously bad, particularly if it's on the broadcast networks, we're probably not going to watch it.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, there's so much stuff that he likes that he's seen on cable and Netflix, and I've seen stuff that he hasn't seen, and we just have to make time for it because especially now when we're getting close to the Emmys,
right?
And it's breakdown time, and you have to have something to say. You have to have seen it. So yeah,
it's tough. Emmy nominations next week, is that right?
Emmy nominations will be out next week, and the craziest part about that too is when we're in a few weeks we're heading down to LA for Death March with Cocktails in TCA, and oh boy, it's just more new stuff coming. And I mean, you already know, you could intuit a lot of things, but both in my writing, but certainly in the sound of my voice, I just am not ready for another wave. That's just like, whoa, so much stuff.
And it's lurking out there, right? Death March.
Yeah.
It's just lurking out there. Yeah. I mean, I did like, I can joke about it, and I will, and I do, but just you listing off all these things that are great out there, it is easy to lose sight when you're mired in kind of the terrible stuff. Like, as you say, Platinum Age, amazing, mm-hmm. good stuff that's out there. So, yeah, we don't have time for the bad stuff, but the good stuff, there is a lot of it, and it's a nice piece with you guys. I mean, it is really like... too much of a good thing is still a whole lot of good things, right? It's like you guys trying to grapple with this volume, but at the same time being like, yeah, but there's still all this great stuff out there. It's an interesting take from you guys, I think.
Yeah, and it's funny because there's that one stretch where, you know, I've seen a little bit of Underground. I've seen a little bit of everything, but I haven't finished everything.
And, right.
You know, I talk about like some of the, you know, I haven't finished the OJ stuff, and I got to get on that. But then I said, like, I was looking at the lighter stuff, like, you know, smaller stuff as far as like Buzz. And so Love and Lady Dynamite on Netflix, have not seen Happen Leonard on Sundance. I was really interested in that. He ended up reviewing it. I saw like an episode or two. Same with Underground. I got to catch up on all those guys, all those shows. I did catch a little bit more of Underground because I interviewed the creator at South by Southwest. I mean, ATX, also, yeah. Also home of South by Southwest. But sure. And, you know, and the same thing with Dan. He turned around and he's like, yeah, I haven't even, he says, I haven't finished Lady Dynamite yet, or Kimmy Schmidt. And like, if you read the piece, you'll see, as you know, like, there's just so much. And we missed a couple of shows. We joked around that we've missed a couple of shows, but yeah, like when you add like Samantha Bee and a couple of other things in there, there's really good shows out there that are hard to get to.
Yeah, it's totally true. And I, like Dan, I was amazed that you didn't mention The Warriors as the best show of 2016 so far.
I'm still hurting. I'm still hurting from the bad ending to that movie. That was not the ending I was hoping for.
Well, you know, it's just like The Empire Strikes Back. The first movie ends really happily, but then the next one comes and it's got a little twist and it ends on
a
down
note.
Crush,
yes.
And then you get the triumphant third installment, something like that.
Can't wait for that.
So your review, as we record this, it's been about 5 hours since your review of season 2 of Mr. Robot dropped. Mm-hmm. So you've watched, what, the first 2 hours? Is that right?
First 2 hours. And it's they're going to run that. I believe they're going to run that back to back.
I think so.
Because it's very cleverly. Sam Esmail, who not only is the creator and the writer, but directs all 12 episodes, very cleverly in these two episodes, you will see the intermission bar pull up. Intermission. He calls it an intermission. And then you come back for the second one. And it's just 2 of 12. And as I note in my review, you can't judge anything off of that as far as like where this season will end up. Because if you watch the first season, you know it's full of crazy twists. And what I was particularly – and I taught at CCA. I taught last season and showed that to my students. And we took some deep dives on that. And what I was particularly – interested in real time, because it's easy when you come back to something and say, oh yeah, I could have got that. In reality is a lot of people were not getting a lot of the twists that he was putting in there, and the one that everybody got was funny because that's the one he wanted you to get. He's like, yeah, I know you're gonna get that. And in some ways he was, you know, in reviews after the first season, he was like, yeah, it was kind of a diversion. Because we were going to come up with two really big twists beyond that. And we kind of wanted everybody to sort of like feel like they were onto something, but not quite get the whole picture. And who knows? He's a creative dude. I thought the things that they did and in that series where they you didn't know who was what or who was where and who was talking to who, what was real. And then, you know, throw in some crazy dream sequences, which were fun. You have this incredibly unreliable narrator in Rami Malek's character, Elliot, because not only does he have mental problems, but he's also a drug addict. Yeah. And he's not on his meds. And who knows? After watching two episodes, I don't know where it's going to go. I will say that I loved the first two episodes I saw, but I think if you were to see them and having not seen the first season, it wouldn't make any sense to you. So everybody's got to watch the first season. And I think if you were just to come in and say, yeah, I watched a couple from last season, so let me try this pilot or these 2 hour premiere. It's a little bit slow because I think they really have to, what I like what Sam Esmail is doing is there's got to be fallout to what they did in the first season, which I won't say in case people haven't seen it, but there has to be fallout and you can't just move on or end there. And he wants to explain the fallout. And I think he's taking his time and he's doing it intricately. And I look to Mr. Robot as it was surprising me. It was a show I didn't think it'd be as good as it got and maintained. And I don't think I don't think the show would work at all without Rami Malek. But I'm happy he's going slow in season 2 because I want it to be a top tier television show, and I hope that it can pull it off in the second season.
You mentioned in your review that the look of the show is also back, where it's got this. It is like no other show, where the people and the framing of shots is strange and makes you feel like there's something wrong with you in watching it, and the sounds and the whole. It is just in terms of going to your visual studies class and all of that. I mean, it is just a show. It feels like no other show. And it's good to hear that continues.
Yeah, it really does. And I loved talking about it last year. And, a little bit of the surprise is gone, because I think that the really interesting thing about last year's was that you didn't know that his composition was so strange.
Right.
And it didn't hit you over the head. And so you would think, what is up with this shot that looks totally, totally not what I thought it would be? And why is this shot making me feel weird? And then of course, when you figure it out, you realize that they're doing that to make you feel like disoriented, just like the character and all people who are living this. There's gradations of disorientation. But one of my favorite stories, I will just say quickly, that came out of last year's Mr. Robot, especially if people are thinking about watching it, is that he had to. So this year he directed everything. So last year he really had to talk to all the directors about, like, this is the look we're going for. This is what we want. And we want to keep it within this narrative. Don't frame things traditionally, I guess. But even more problematic for him, which was kind of a funny story, is that all the crews and the crews that worked on the show, and they shoot in New York, they basically had to be retrained, because their knee-jerk reaction was that he'd say, okay, this shot calls for this, and they would go to set it up. And he's like, oh, no, that's not what we're doing. And so you basically had guys who've been in the television industry for numbers of years who worked on these crews had to, like, rig everything differently, because the shot was – the composition of the shot was like, yeah, we're going to shoot this shot of Times Square and it's going to be awesome, but we're only going to have Rami's little teeny head in the left bottom left corner. And like, it just, for a lot of the crew at the beginning, they were just like, I don't get this. Why would you do that? Why would we set this shot up and you can barely see the character's head in the corner? And there was a story, I think that Sam said, where when they were setting it up, people were like, that something's wrong here, because they had a shot where they were in an office and they were shooting them from the chest up, which is weird. You either see a full body shot or you're above them or something. So there was so much of the lighting in the office was like right above their heads in the way that they chopped it. So their body was chopped in half, and then they came up and there's their head, and then right above them was the lights. And people who had done television were like, this is wrong. And he's like, no, yeah, we want it to be that way, because we want it to feel wrong, but not for you to figure it out right away. So, yeah, I love that show.
So he's a first-time showrunner, and now he is directing. He's the writer-director now of this entire season. So it's like another extra layer for him of obviously, he knew exactly what he wanted out of his directors and his crew. And so this year, it's just also my understanding that they shot it like a movie. They essentially just did a shoot for the 12 episodes and then put it together. So which you can do if there's only one director and one writer, yeah. I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's directed in the past. He did an indie movie, and he did episodes last year as well. But for him to do all 12 this year is exactly what you said. He said, look, I can streamline the process. You know, USA Network was worried that he was going to burn out, because Soderbergh and other people have shot their own. Kerry Fukunaga did all episodes of the first season of True Detective
and right.
Won an Emmy for it. And then, but more, probably much more famously, Steven Soderbergh has done The Nick. He directs every episode. But those guys are also not the showrunner and the writer.
Yeah.
So he's taking on so much stuff. But his argument was, I won't burn out, and I kind of really need to do it to keep my vision. And he sold them basically like, we're going to shoot. So they keep coming back to this basketball court in New York. And apparently they shot like, okay, this is for episodes 1, 2, 5, 7, and 9. And they would shoot different scenes. Mm. And it's interesting, because the actors, I've read stories where the actors are like, yeah, it's thank God he's there and we don't have to call him on the cell phone. Cause basically we come in and you're like, we want you to be doing this. And they're like, oh, okay, that's like the 9th episode and your first day of shooting. So it was really hard for the actors to sort of wrap their heads around how much time has elapsed between my character when we first met and what they would actually be doing in this scene 9 episodes later. So it's a really interesting way of certainly doing television.
Yeah, it's like an 8-hour-long movie carved into 12 episodes, yeah. Basically. Well, I'm looking forward to it. It's been a while since there's been a show coming back, that maybe since like Game of Thrones came back this season, that I've been that excited about a returning show. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Speaking of Game of Thrones, by the way, I'm gonna throw this in as breaking, well, semi-breaking. Yes. As you probably heard. It's going to be delayed.
Yeah, I saw that winter isn't coming fast enough. That they actually need the weather in Northern Ireland and all their other locations to be worse because they have to show that it's winter. And so they say that they're going to delay it. I'm not sure I believe that, but you think they would have thought about that in advance. Like, it's not a surprise. The seasons are not surprising.
You wouldn't think that would be a surprise. But that was... Look, I'm so happy about what they did last season, as you and I discussed here before. That go ahead, take your time, whatever. Guys. I just want it to be good.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever, guys. Mm-hmm. Do what you need to do. But still, yeah, it's maybe not. When they said they were coming back with fewer episodes, I did wonder if that meant they would be starting later and airing it later in the year. Even if they just start a month or 6 weeks later, I guess we'll see. But that was a bummer. Made me sad because I want that.
Yeah.
I want more Game of Thrones.
But who knows? Like you said, you pointed out last week, maybe they end up adding more episodes.
Who knows? That's right. Maybe so. Maybe as they're writing, maybe they will. I do think that they're at that point with that show where if they go to HBO and like, yeah, actually, it's looking like 8 episodes now. HBO is going to be like, whatever, just do whatever. Good. Fine. Do whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
I think they have a license to kill at this point.
They can do whatever they want, basically.
Anything else going on? I know you guys talked about your Emmy wish list. I don't know if we want to go into that or if we want to just sort of brace ourselves and talk about the Emmy nominations next week when they come out.
I think we should do that. Yeah. I think we should brace ourselves for that. people should look over that list of what that Dan and I talked about, what the stuff that's come out in the last 6 months. TV doesn't really work. It is a 12-hour calendar, but it really kind of, people really start our year in September and then we go onwards. It doesn't really start in January, but there we are six months into the new year and there's a lot of TV.
A lot of TV. It's for sure. You want to do some letters from listeners?
Yes. I sure hope there's something we could be fact-checked on.
How could there not be? That seems like a must. All right, before we do that, let's take a moment to thank our sponsor. So this episode of the TV Talk Machine brought to you by the Zombies Run Virtual Race. Anybody who has tried running knows that it will help you get fit, absolutely, and that it is really boring, absolutely. Oh, my God. But this is something that will make running fun. It's a virtual race. Wherever you are in the world, you head out to run a 5K or a 10K. You put your headphones in, get your iPhone out, and as you run, the app immerses you in a thrilling audio story. It's specially designed to match the distance you're running. You'll hear zombies. They're close on your heels trying to get you, so you got to run faster. You break into a vault that's vital to the survival of humanity. It's a little bit like a Walking Dead sort of storyline. You run further and faster than ever. You ever thought you could, because you're not just running around the park, you're running to save the world with the Zombies Run Virtual Race. So entering the race gets you a thrilling audio adventure series. It'll take you from the start of your training all the way to the end. You will get a Pro Spec technical running tee, a finisher's medal, and a bunch of other great gear. It all costs $55, which is way cheaper and more fun than a gym membership. So go to zombiesvirtualrace.com and use the coupon code TV Talk Machine, and you'll get $5 off your entry. Thank you to Zombies Run Virtual Race for the fall of 2016. Woo!
Love
run
it.
Away. You get a medal. It's the zombie running medal.
I need to do some running. I gotta tell you. I need to get in shape. I need that.
Me too.
I am out of shape, man. I think that I may be out of shape, just a wild guess here, from watching too much television.
Oh, it could be.
Yeah.
It could be. That's a good reason. You got a good excuse.
There's a corollary.
I might be out of shape from typing things at a desk and talking into a microphone.
Right.
While not running.
From zombies.
It's bad for running. All right, so we got some letters here. First, your obligatory Dean from the 707 Travel Update. He says he's currently watching Twin Peaks in the state of Washington, but will be returning to the Eastern time zone minivan travels next
week.
Man,
he's all over the place. It's exhausting.
Yeah, really. So he must have come back from Hawaii to Washington, and then we'll fly back to the East Coast and continue his summer drive. That guy, he gets around.
He gets around.
We also got a nice tweet with a picture from a bunch of Twitter users. It was Ms. Ginny Mae, Doom Bunny, A Peck of Pickles, and Stanford Steph. They're all hanging out and meeting up without us because they got tired of waiting for the TV Talk Machine meetup.
That does fall on me, I think.
One of these days we'll get it together and we'll just, all we really have to do is pick a time and a location and mention it in the show and say, we will be here at this time. That's all it really takes.
I believe
we'd have to do that
without really going overboard. I believe I may be the wink link.
I don't know. I haven't pushed or anything for it either. I've just been like, oh yeah, that would be nice. And then don't do anything.
That's
about
a thing
it.
We
so
could do.
What?
That thing. Good butt, yeah.
Oh, that.
That's what
I
I'm
guess,
thinking.
Whatever.
I hear it. I'm like, that's a great idea.
We could totally do it. It's a great idea. Yeah. All right. And then nothing happens, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe someday.
I'm not a really great planner. I'm just going to lay that out there. All right.
Maybe at some point here, it may just pop in there where I say, okay, Tim, what's a good evening? And we can go to, it doesn't even matter, right? We just go upstairs to the 21st Amendment or something while
and
the Giants
we'll just
are out
see
of
who
town.
Comes. Yeah.
And just see who shows up. That might be the thing to do. All right. Moving on then. Our friend Brando sent a tweet that he thought we should see. It's from Michael J. Nelson, the former head writer and host of Mystery Science Theater 3000. He does Riff Tracks now. And he tweeted, "The makers of vinyl must thank their lucky stars that Roadies exists, so they're not history's worst TV show about rock and roll." Brando thought we should see that. I thought you would appreciate it.
Yeah, it's. I'm glad I saw that because that is a thing. Yeah.
Let's see what else we've got. We have a question from a Twitter handle that I cannot pronounce, but they're in the +49.
Ooh.
I like the international Twitter handles. Let's see if I can find who this person is. Tobias in the +49. The +49 is. Germany. How about that? I looked it up. Little internet research.
He's reeling
there.
Now from the soccer loss. I'm sorry. Apologies. Yeah.
So Tobias says, "I don't like to start series when I don't know they will end well. What completed series do you recommend binging this summer?" So they got a series with a good ending. So conventional wisdom at least would be not Battlestar Galactica and not Lost.
The ending of it. Oh, he's not saying I want to make sure all the episodes get in. He wants the last episode to be great.
Yeah, he wants it to stick the landing and not, so he doesn't want to watch a show that hasn't finished yet or I think has a bad ending. But
so nothing
that,
in
you know,
progress.
Right, something that's done.
Okay, well, Breaking Bad and Mad Men.
And Mad Men.
For sure. You know. Then I would do The Wire, and then I would probably do The Sopranos. I mean, those are the big ones.
But
your results may vary on the Sopranos final season. And
yeah, how do you feel about ending. Journey?
Hey, spoiler!
That's
a tough one.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's lots of great lots
you know
of
what?
Shows
I'll
that
tell
are out
you,
there that
here's
are good
a, here's a weird one.
Parks and Recreation, you want some comedy? That's a good one. Has a good ending.
That's a good one. I would also say Extras on HBO.
Yeah, and that one's not that long because it's
just two seasons.
Ricky Gervais, so it's like two
I
seasons,
loved how that
two
ended.
Short seasons.
I thought that there was something real about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so here's one. This is from Ben in the 718. Says, "Gentlemen, now that Mr. Robot is available on Amazon Prime Video, I finally had a chance to watch it, and I noticed not a thing in the first episode. While Slater and Malik are on the subway headed to Coney Island, they get off at Church Avenue. Malik asks why they are getting off, and the reply is, "We need to transfer for the Q train." There's one slight problem. The Q train doesn't stop at Church Avenue. Moreover, the subway... subway facts. Moreover, the subway that does stop at Church Avenue, the F train, goes directly to Coney Island, right to where the hideout is supposed to be. I'm not sure this was something mentioned before, but it sure bothered me while watching an otherwise enjoyable show. I would say, Ben, you've discovered one of the interesting things about Mr. Robot, which it's an unreliable narrator telling the story, and he is lying to you about what the subway directions are. It's all part of the grand game that's being played by Mr. Robot.
Could be. Man.
That's my answer.
That's deep. But that is funny. You gotta be there. A New Yorker, I guess, to know that, huh?
Yeah.
I'm sure I would say the same thing on BART out here.
Exactly right. It's like, it doesn't go there. You can't, the train to Pittsburgh Bay Point doesn't go through Berkeley.
Not without a transfer, does it, mister?
Matt from the +44, the bottle episode, our buddy, yeah. Matt, who binged our show and now must listen on the slow path once a week, like a monster, like an animal. Said on, the Knott's Landing pocket universe. Here we go again. this is a good one. He said, Saved by the Bell also had its own pocket universe for half a season in which Jesse and Kelly didn't exist, but instead another girl called Tori did. They alternated between the two casts and never referenced each other at all. I firmly believe this is what inevitably influenced Fringe. Matt from the +44. I looked it up because, of course, fact checking is now a thing that I occasionally do. And it does seem that this is true, that they had issues with some of the actors in the last season. And so they cast a new character, but rather than but they had the actors for some episodes, just not all the episodes. So apparently they shot episodes with one set of people and other episodes with this replacement character, and then just kind of like interspersed them. Which is really weird, but
that is very odd. That's like the first time when I was a kid and I saw Richie Cunningham had a brother.
Yeah, Chuck.
Who the hell is that at the table?
And he vanished. Chuck vanished from existence. Also an influence for Fringe, I believe.
Yes, Fringe was Chuck really Cunningham. On it. Little window of opportunity there. Oh, see what he did there at the window?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Ed from the 502 wrote in to say, this is a suggestion for a rock and roll series. He says, how about one set in one of the famous recording studios with the interaction of the producers and band members over the course of a season? There are many great stories about recording sessions out there. It would mix music and drama. So
yeah, I like it.
Sure, maybe
I like it because you get
little Sun Records or something.
You could have a total. Oh yeah, like any of the legendary studios. You could have all kinds of different genres being played together. That would be awesome. That way you wouldn't just be a rock thing. It could be, it could be everything. I like it. I like that idea. Yeah. You could even do a fictional one, right?
That's true. I'm thinking about, like, especially a lot of those. There was the clash of, like, the black artists who mastered that music, and then you had the white artists who came in and kind of appropriated it. And there was this mixture of sort of like some working together and some admiration, but also this feeling of like you just stole our stuff to market it to white America. Could be interesting period drama there too.
I like it. I like it already.
All right. Good job, Ed. You're the showrunner of. That there you go.
You'll be canned in the first fifth of the season if you don't get it together. Yeah. Like, keep a tight grip on the cast and the writers.
Yeah, for sure.
Run that show.
Susan from the 415 area code of record, but living in the 713.
Well, okay, where's that? Internet.
That's a Houston, Texas.
Oh, all right.
Houston, Texas. Yeah. Well, so she's an expat, California expat. Says, I'm at home on medical leave this month, so I checked out Line of Duty yesterday. Mm-hmm. I was hooked in the first scene, and then I saw Lenny James, and he was amazing. I'm starting season two this morning. No slow binging for me.
It's another one I'm adding to my list of things to binge.
Line of Duty. Mm-hmm. And no slow binge. She's not doing my little slow binge message. She's going to full on binge.
Said, no.
Well, if you're on medical leave, I'd say, take the full-on binge.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you've got a lot of meds.
Slow binge is for when you're busy doing lots of stuff. But if you're on leave, I think the full binge is required. Okay, here's a great... We got two letters from the plus 4-4 now. First, Clive from the +44, a nation descending into chaos.
Yes, no doubt about it.
Says, I've been listening with interest to your discussions on broadcast standards. We talked about swearing on TV last week. I've always been a little baffled by this. To me, and probably the majority of UK TV viewers, very strict standards imposed on broadcast terrestrial and network TV in the US. We've long had a 9 p.m. watershed in the UK, where after that point, adult language and nudity is permitted. On cable and satellite networks such as Sky, the watershed is even earlier at 8 p.m. As an example of how long the 9 p.m. watershed has been in use, the Casanova miniseries was broadcast in 1971 on BBC Two and featured full frontal nudity and sex scenes. Use of the F word is not unusual after 9 p.m. in dramas and talk shows, although the C word would normally not occur until after 10 p.m. So is this a huge difference culturally? Is it a basic difference between attitudes in the U.S. and the U.K.? Are Americans inherently more prudish than the Brits? No one here finds adult language and nudity on TV in the least unusual or surprising or shocking, and it has been like this for decades. I mean, that's the basic answer. He answered his own question here, I feel like.
I think he did, better than we did.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, America is incredibly mm-hmm. prudish. And the FCC regulated very tightly all broadcast television. And so broadcast television was largely whitewashed with a few examples of things that would run generally on non-commercial TV. Because the other thing was there was commercial pressure, like the advertisers didn't want to be seen with anything that was controversial. And if you put in something especially controversial, some affiliates wouldn't run it. And so your ratings would go down. The advertisers didn't like that. And so occasionally you'd see something particularly notable as a special or on PBS or maybe late in the evening. Things are a little more risque, but even then, you know, it's not a clear watershed. Like, I mean, for years they tried to have more adult shows on at 10 o'clock, but even then the restrictions were a lot less than what you'd be on after the late news at 11:30.
Yep. And that's,
yeah. And now things are different because cable is not regulated by the FCC. So they just have that, you know, basically obscenity restriction, which is a lot less. It's just basically anything goes except for porn, essentially, on wide open cable channels. But yeah, the U.S.
prudes.
Are a bunch of prudes. Mm-hmm. And it is only now kind of changing because of the cable stuff. And the cable stuff has really pushed it. And they probably could have tried to push it sooner, but it's only been in the last decade, maybe, that basic cable, you know, non-HBO cable has really gone all out with that stuff. And even so, we see that some words still they don't show on basic cable.
Yeah, I mean, it's... What is wrong with this country?
Yeah, it's changing a little bit, at least in the TV stuff. Yehuda also wrote in, who's written in before, and I don't have her letter in front of me, but she said basically the same thing, which is, you know, in the rest of the world, people don't care about this stuff. And it's totally right. True. And she was saying, why wouldn't they shoot it with all the bad words and then just take it out for Americans and let everyone else see it? And I think the answer is, I think they're starting to do that yeah. now. But for a long time, they didn't because, believe it or not, this extends to, like, even today on some shows, if somebody says a bad word, they don't just bleep it out, they will actually like fuzz their face so that you can't see their mouth make the word yeah. right, and that's not so good for your drama, your costume drama, so they just don't, and they write around it, and it's only now that started.
Nation of Puritans,
yeah,
that's us.
It is founded by Puritans, and it's still there
shows.
Yeah. Plenty of violence, though. You can have plenty of violence
on TV. Yeah, just shoot somebody's eye right out and then splatter
it. But no sex.
Splatter it.
And no bad words.
No.
Yep.
Different kind of money shot.
Yeah. Okay, this one is from Rob in the +44.
Hey, Rob.
And this is, I did some research on this one, okay. Tim.
Oh,
I'm pretty proud
nice.
Of that. I did some research. He says, over here in the +44, I've been waiting for The Expanse to appear since hearing you talk about the books and then the series and The Incomparable. For some reason, the Sci-Fi Network in the UK has never shown it, and it seems to be in limbo. Is it something to do with international licensing? I've never been sure. I was listening to you guys talk about the window between original broadcast and availability on streaming, and this show struck me as an example of a network allowing a show to languish and not even giving non-subscribers a way to buy it legitimacy. There is no window. I regularly search iTunes for it to no avail. Nobody's forced to find an illegal stream, but it does seem weird not to even let people get hold of it legitimately. Rob in the plus 44. I did the research, and this is, you know, it's actually a similar answer to that answer we had a week or two ago about shows that leave the network and then you can't get them on streaming, which is one of the ways that TV shows make money for their producers is they sell them internationally. And so they hold those rights back until somebody will write them a check to roll it out on their broadcast channel or streaming service in various countries. And of course, you know, Les Moonves at CBS bragged that they had mostly paid for or half paid for the new Star Trek show before they even started casting it, because they sold it overseas. Mm-hmm. So it's streaming in the US, but it's going to be on all, you know, various locations everywhere else internationally. The Expanse, I looked it up, is being distributed internationally by Legendary, and they haven't made a deal with the UK yet. And they're not going to make it available for a la carte in the UK, because that will devalue their ultimate sale of it in the UK. And that totally sucks, but that's what's going on here, is this fracturing of video rights internationally, because there you can't just roll it out everywhere internationally, which would be the other way to do it. Eventually, I think there will be lots of international products. If the Expanse was a Netflix show, it would be everywhere immediately. But since it's not that, they are making, one of the ways they get their money back for making the show is selling it internationally. And the UK, for whatever reason, hasn't sold. Or if it has sold, the people who bought it aren't ready to show it yet. They want to market it, and they're waiting for the right time, I guess, to show it. I feel like this is changing a lot, because piracy and the internet and buzz on the internet, like if a show runs in the US, an American show runs in the US, that's like a really good time to launch it everywhere, because that buzz doesn't stop in the US. It goes overseas. It seems like this is happening less and less, but this is an interesting exception to the rule, I guess, where for whatever reason, they're just sitting on it in the UK. And you got to wonder, is it going to even get good ratings when they show it in the UK, because it's been sitting on the shelf for, you know, at this point, 7 months.
Right. I think a lot of it's going to have to depend on what kind of launch they do and what kind of anticipation there is over there. But yeah, they're not going to mess around with their money. No way.
Right. Because that's what it comes down to, is the package. You know, if you put it out on DVD or whatever, or on iTunes in the UK, then you've lost, you know, a lot of money that you could ask for from a broadcaster to show it. And that's just the reality of it. So that's why. So this is a weird example. It's not like the same as why aren't shows streaming right after they go off air. Although the CW, I guess we should mention, the CW did.
Yes.
I don't know if we mentioned this last week or not. They signed a deal to put all of their shows on, is it on Netflix? 8 days after their season ends, the whole season goes on Netflix. So that closes the window. Now, people are kind of grumpy because it means that they're not going to be on Hulu like the day after they air. But they are going to be on thecw.com the day after they air. And then on Netflix, it's going to be that moment where once you miss the season, as soon as that season is out, boom, they're going to all be on Netflix. You're not going to have that weird thing where everybody's talking about it, but nobody can see it. After it's off the air, after the show is not being shown anymore, they'll, you know, if you miss The Flash, that's okay. 8 days after the season finale, that whole season's going to go up on Netflix to air starting next year.
We'll be around to talk about it. You can always talk about it with us. We'll throw a comment in there. We'll help you out.
Yeah, sure. Just ask. Just ask once you finally see it. All right, Dan in the secret city in the 865. I don't know what that means, Dan.
I don't either.
The secret city.
I love it.
Well, Knoxville, Tennessee is the general area of the 865, but I don't know where the secret city is.
He's hiding.
Oh, is it Oak Ridge, like where they worked on the Manhattan Project?
Maybe it is. Oh, good. I'm tapping my nose. Good knowledge. Maybe it is.
Anyway, Dan says, it's The Expanse again. The Expanse and Doctor Who aren't coming back till 2017. Any notable science fiction series for the summer or fall? Has Jason seen the first episode of season 2 of Killjoys or Dark Matter? And if so, what did he think of them? Dan, I got bad news for you. I've never even seen Killjoys, although I had somebody recommend it to me, and I haven't. And I watched the first 2 hours of Dark Matter last year, and I didn't like it. Although I've been told that it gets better. It's one of those things where it so didn't impress me in the first 2 hours that I haven't watched it. So I don't know. I'd say it's not traditional sci-fi, but, you know, the techno thrillerness of Mr. Robot, I think that's got to be on your list. It's not quite sci-fi, but it's pretty close. And I feel like that's the show that I'm most excited about this summer. So that's mine. I don't know if there's other sci-fi stuff out there. It's really not on my radar because a lot of the stuff has let me down when I watched it last summer.
Okay. Well, you're the authority.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I'm just not doing my job. See, I need to really embrace just watching all this stuff. But so much of it is just not very.
I'm gonna
good,
catch up. Oh, on the Magicians. I gotta catch up on the Magicians.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
that's one of my goals. Yeah.
Do that. That gets better as mm-hmm. it goes too.
My daughter's gonna watch
definitely
that too.
Magicians. Mm-hmm. And Dan, yeah, if you missed Humans last summer, maybe
Humans.
Roll that in there.
Yes, love it.
I wish that was back this summer, but it is.
It
alas,
did not.
It is,
yeah, it's gonna get pushed out.
Late to the party.
Pushed out later. But it's coming back though.
It is coming back, just not this summer. It was that last summer was just so beautiful. Humans and Mr. Robot. It was such a beautiful thing.
Loved it. Great combo.
Yeah. All right. Dave from the 513. This is another one that is I think a you and me tag team. I read this article about how Disney is buying a big stake in Major League Baseball Advanced Media, better known to us simply as MLB.TV. They seem to think this is to achieve synergy with ESPN and get revenue from baseball, but I wonder if it's more about the technology for streaming. I recall hearing somewhere there was a tie between HBO and MLB's technology. Surely Disney has other needs for reliable streaming tech for their parks and their shows, even if they don't also want it for sports or broadcast channels. What do you think, Dave, in the 513?
Ooh.
I've met those mm-hmm. guys. I've met the okay, MLB Advanced Media mm-hmm. guys. It sounds like Disney is buying a third and with an option to buy 2/3 of the streaming business of MLB Advanced Media. So not actually MLB Advanced Media, but they're kind of like they're breaking out this portion of it that is this amazing web streaming infrastructure that they built. And yeah, I think HBO Now maybe is built on that, but not HBO Go. It's one of them and not the other one. And they back a lot of other streams that you would be surprised, or actually you'd be like, baseball, really? Why? But it turns out baseball, in order to fulfill their own business, built this incredible technology that then other people have used. And so I think that's what's going on. I think Dave, you're absolutely right that this is about Disney in general wanting to have a streaming powerhouse as part of their business. I think it's a good investment because everything is going to be streamed in the future. Like every channel is going to stream live and on demand, and they've got good tech there. Plus Disney's got all the need for streaming sports with ESPN, and they have been a partner of MLB's streaming business up to now. And then they've got ABC, and they've got all their networks, and they've got all the other Disney content. And I think it just totally makes sense. What's really funny is that this is just money for the baseball owners. Like this was such a great investment that they made. In the Major League Baseball Advanced Media, or BAM is usually what they call it. The BAM streaming stuff, poof, that is just, they're getting like billions of dollars of upside from their investment in that business. So, and that's all money they don't have to share with the players because it's isolated from being attached to like the actual sport product that they have to share with players. So it's just cash for the owners.
The rich get richer.
They do. Now, there was a time. Remember, there was a time when buying a sports franchise was just an ego trip.
Oh,
but
now it's business.
These days, they're moneymakers. Yeah. They're not just for fun. Okay, one more. This is Joe from the 208.
Okay, let's do this one. Let's hit this one out of the park.
Joe proposes a new segment on the TV Talk Machine.
Right.
It's called "Is That a Thing?"
Oh.
It's related to "That's Not a Thing."
Like a cousin.
Where listeners write in with TV tropes that we're honestly curious about, but don't have enough knowledge to declare if it's a thing or not. And then we rely on the vast audience of experts to crowdsource it.
Okay.
So the idea is people will write in and say, hey, is this a thing? And then other people will write in and say whether that's a thing or not. Because obviously we have an incredibly knowledgeable set of listeners out there, plus a volunteer researcher, at least one, right? So that's
one.
Joe's proposal. And he's got one he wants to propose to us.
Please kick us off with something.
Yes. Yeah. In a courtroom drama, he says, The lawyer says, objection. And the judge says, I'll allow it. I want to see where this is going, and looks at the witness. So, question to those out there in the legal profession, is that a thing? Does that actually happen?
It's a good one. So, I want to see where this is going.
Send those in. Yeah, send those in. I want to see. Yeah, no. Tell me more. I want to see what. I can't wait to see what happens next.
Yeah, I got to think that's not a thing. I think that's perfect for TV, though. It's a TV thing for sure.
Yeah. This is just getting good. And the commercial break, we just had one. So let's
I can allow this, and then they'll drop a bomb, and then I'll disallow that, but the bomb will be a drop, and it'll be great drama. Yeah. Come on, lawyers. Tell us what the truth is.
The one I always like in movies and TV shows is the where they bang the gavel and they say one more outburst and I'll clear this courtroom. But they never actually clear the courtroom. There's never that last outburst. So you can get all the way to almost the last outburst, but you can never get to the final outburst where they clear the courtroom.
I often think that.
Everybody out. Like, I mean, would that be the next scene? Is like, go out. We're doing the rest of the scene with no extras. Get out.
Just handheld cameras.
Doesn't happen.
People going down the stairs, walking down the exit. No, elevator's out. I'd watch that.
Yeah, I wonder what happened in there. Well, we won't know now. There's too many outbursts. Thanks, Jerry. Outbursty, Jerry.
We just made the worst courtroom drama ever.
Yeah.
The worst.
Yes. It's out of the courtroom drama. It's like, get out.
Ooh, see?
Mm-hmm. Then what happens? They just wait outside and it's really boring.
No, here's what happens.
The show gets canceled.
The defendant mixes in with the crowd and walks out.
Oh, interesting. I don't think that's how courtrooms work.
Well, I know it's not, but it's going to work on my show.
Yeah. All right. Okay. I think that's not a thing, Tim. I'm not a thinging you right now. All right. Well, here's where you can send your comments about the show, your things that you want to know if it's a thing, and your declarations about something that has been asked that is not a thing. You can send them to us at podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. Or, of course, you can post them on our Facebook page, facebook.com/tvtalkmachine. Or you can tweet at us at TVTM. I am Jay Snell on Twitter. Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. And that's it. That's it. I think we're done for this edition of the TV Talk Machine.
90,
but we'll be back next week.
90 in the bank.
Number 90 is gone. We're in the 90s now.
Mm-hmm.
It's summertime. It's hot in the 90s.
I see what you did there.
And we're barreling on toward 100, but that's still a little ways away. But we'll be back next week with, I guess we'll have some Emmy nomination reactions next week.
Close or maybe not. I think it's the 16th.
Oh, okay. Well, then we won't. Well, then what's going to happen next week?
I have no idea. We just gave the world's worst tease to next week's episode. The worst tease.
It wouldn't surprise me.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Emmy nominations announcement. July 14th, which is next week.
Okay. All right. We got it then.
We got it. So that'll be, we'll be like next day, we'll be like quick Emmy nominations reactions.
Good. The whole thing will be that.
That's going to be next week. It's going to be great.
Yes. Disallow all of our joking around, or at least my cackling. Oh, I've lost my mind.
Yeah, that's okay. We're at the end, so it's fine. So thanks to everybody out there for listening to TV Talk Machine number 90. Maybe not one of our finest efforts, but it was okay. It'll do. It'll play. We'll release it simultaneously worldwide. Well, it'll work. And Tim, I'll talk to you next week when maybe the Emmy nominations will be out.
I wouldn't. Yeah. Okay, great.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.